Now, if you were asked to name a politician who was also a novelist, who would you think of? British Conservative Geoffrey Archer, perhaps, or his 19th century predecessor, Benjamin Disraeli? Well, Australia now has its own MP novelist. Labor's Graham Perrett represents the federal seat of Moreton in Queensland and was elected to Parliament in the Rudd slide of November 2007. His first novel, The Twelfth Fish, is about a schoolteacher who gets posted to the small town of Lawson in outback Queensland. And the story has some parallels with Graham Perrett's own former career as a teacher. The Twelfth Fish has just been published by Vulgar Press, but as Graham Perrett explained to Peter Mayres, that doesn't mean he spent his first year in Parliament scribbling away on the back bench pursuing his love of literature at the taxpayers' expense.
No, definitely not. I think I started writing this back in about 92, 91. Funnily enough, one of the inspirations was someone I did my honours year of literature with, because I was a full-time school teacher and I was doing my honours degree in literature. And one of my fellow students said she'd written a book and sent it off to the Vogel Prize, the Vogel Literature Competition. And I remember thinking, no way, there's no way you'd have time to write a book. Well, she did, and that woman was Helen Darville, also known as Helen Demidenko. And so she actually inspired me to say, well, if before that brouhaha broke out, that you need to just find the time to write. And so she was a bit of an inspiration in a weird way.
And you did actually submit The Twelfth Fish, I think, originally for the Vogel Prize.
Yeah, I think I sent it in 99 or 2000. I dug out the letter from my rejection pile the other day. And it didn't make the final four because they published the final four, but Allen and Unwin were prepared to publish it. So that was my first encounter with publishing. I sent off the manuscript, came back and said, didn't make the final four, but we're happy to publish. And I was thinking, this is fantastic. All those hard luck stories weren't going to apply to me. But
this writing business is easy.
That's what I thought. And then about 6 months later, they changed their mind and said the manuscript needed a lot more work. That's when the rejection slips started piling up.
The Twelfth Fish is about a young teacher called Lawrence Lawler, a surfie from the Gold Coast who's been posted to the town of Lawson in country Queensland to work at St Christopher's Catholic High School. He falls in love with the local doctor, Karen Golden, who's also new to the town, having come from eastern suburb Sydney. But Lawrence also finds it impossible to resist the sexual advances of a married colleague called Scylla. Now, you were a teacher in rural Queensland, so is there a bit of autobiography in this?
Well, I've certainly never slept with any of my colleagues. There's autobiographical elements. Obviously, I grew up in a country town not dissimilar to Lawson, and I was a school teacher. But it is a work of fiction. I stress that. Unlike some of the other backbenchers' works, I can swear that it is a work of fiction.
But it does draw on your experience as a teacher in remote Queensland, I guess.
Yeah. I taught up in North Queensland, not in a dry country town, in the wettest town in Australia, actually, and also up on the Darling Downs. And, yeah, I drew on elements of that. But the character, Lawrence, he's a despicable character. So I guess I search for the worst parts of my life and my characteristics, I guess, and extrapolated them. He's a very weak man. I've spent my life trying to be a decent man.
He is a weak man, and as you say, he's a despicable character. He cheats and lies and deceives and so on. But I guess in order to carry his story off, we have to have a certain sympathy for him, don't we?
I actually took a bit of inspiration, I guess, from the John Updike Rabbit Run books. You know, he's not dissimilar to that, I guess, in that he's a very flawed character, but there is something about him that is engaging, I hope. I mean, I actually find Scylla the most interesting character, but
that's the married colleague who he sleeps with.
Yeah.
And why do you find Why do you find her the most interesting?
Oh, well, she's just probably the most enigmatic, I guess, of the characters. Bit of a riddle, I guess.
She has a bit of a reputation for sleeping around in the town. I mean, it's known that she has these dalliances. But what I found interesting is that whenever she does sleep with Lawrence, with the young teacher who's come to town, she makes clear it's his choice and his responsibility. I mean, she's not allowing him to sort of abnegate his responsibility for his actions.
Yeah. Whilst she is married, she's got her own moral code, whatever that might be. And I guess she's putting the onus on Lawrence to develop his own moral code. He sort of has a bit of a code, but just seems to fail miserably in terms of adhering to that.
And he has good advice, too, from friends. And he has a friendship with a well-educated local shearer called Christian Dorado and his Aboriginal mate, Brian Weatherbone. Those friendships are also central to the novel.
Well, the Christian character is really the good role model, I guess, as to how one could live one's life if he had a bit more courage and a bit more dignity and was able to keep his pants on.
You've obviously made deliberate choices with names. Your hero is called Lawrence Lawson Lawler, so recalling a couple of Labor legends there. And his friend, Christian Dorado, that suggests the notion of El Dorado.
Yeah, the promised land in the south. Yeah, that's why he had to have that heritage, I guess, because...
Because he's part Puerto Rican, isn't he?
Part Puerto Rican, yeah. But I wanted to explore that idea of what Australia is. And I use other names in there, the Scylla and Charybdis from Ulysses. And I'm not sure if you would have picked up the Gert by Sea.
Indeed, I did, yes.
The property, yeah. Yeah, no, the names are important in terms of exploring Australia through the names is important.
And the character of Christian Dorado, you've mentioned he's the counterpoint to Lawrence Lawler. He's the role model. Is he some kind of a role model for what you'd like Australia to be?
Well, he's certainly someone who lives a deliberate life and is a kind, good man, whereas obviously the anti-hero of Lawrence, the main character, hasn't quite got to that stage in his life. I mean...
Well, he says of himself that he's still got the mentality of a 16-year-old.
That's right. So, I mean, and it's not uncommon for young men, I guess, to be a bit more self-focused. It's up to Lawrence to work out how to live a life with dignity and, courage and grace under pressure and all those things that Fitzgerald and Hemingway talked about. There is a sequel. It's a trilogy, really, and his character does develop a lot more over the next couple of books.
So there is hope for Lawrence Lawler in the future.
It's up to the reader to decide how Lawrence is going to live his life as it's mapped out at the end of the book.
And whether he's actually learned. Well, let's give listeners a taste of the novel. The novel is called The Twelfth Fish. It's by Graham Perrett, who also happens to be a federal Labor MP for the seat of Moreton. Graham Perrett, I'll get you to read a section from the chapter called Burnt Offerings and Consecration, which describes the town's Australia Day picnic and water skiing competition. Now, the narrator, Lawrence Lawler, has only been in town a few days. He hasn't even started teaching yet. Already he's slept with a married colleague, Scylla, and at the picnic he finds himself attracted to the local doctor, Karen Golden.
Karen suddenly rose to her feet as I was finishing off my most amusing surfing story. I'm going for a walk to soak up some more of this Australian culture. Do I dare to get up and walk with her? My faint heart bade me keep my seat and listen to a thousand stories of Lawson. Eventually the last leaf of gold vanished from the river and brought an air of departure. Townsfolk reclaimed their children, gear and cars, and headed home. Only a few boats bravely raced up and down the darkening river. I thought of walking home, but the wandering Karen had to return eventually. The conversation ebbed and flowed gently and then faded with the light into a rare silence. Jim Atkinson's roar destroyed our contemplative mood. Here he goes, ladies and gentlemen, the last jump of the day to end our Australia Day celebrations. We all looked to the gloomy river. Oh, no, 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 he hasn't made that jump at all. He's in trouble. Scylla jumped to her feet. Come on, we'd better see if everyone's okay. Dr. Golden to the boat ramp, please, boomed through the speakers. Dr. Golden to the boat ramp, please. We ran down to the river's edge with the other drunken sticky beaks. Who is it? It's that young Weatherbone boy. Thank God he had a life jacket on. Why was he trying to ski in this light? Has somebody called the ambulance? Don't try to lift him. You could damage something. I stayed safe and still and anonymous while Christian Dorado stepped forward and directed proceedings by getting cars to swing their headlights onto the scene. After gently placing Brian on the ground, the bearers stepped away from what looked like a broken toy. Christian called for blankets and towels and jarred rubbernecks into helpfulness, while Atkinson's strident calls for Dr. Golden continued until she arrived at Brian's side. A prolonged ululation cut through the hubbub, throttling the onlookers' babble and raising arcane hair on necks. The woman responsible for the unearthly noise sprawled beside Brian's broken form and held him in her arms. This black Pieta was a hammer blow to the senses, the naked emotion displayed scratching images into my eyes that tears and years will never wash away. A hopelessly dismal sight. Grief surged through me. Brian's father arrived to help support his wife's sagging form while Christian steadied them both away from the edge of Karen's work. Lawson's half-drunk paramedic backed his ambulance up and swallowed the main players. With its terrible cargo in stall, the vehicle moved off up the riverbank, rocking, slightly rocking.
Graham Perrett reading from his novel The Twelfth Fish, which has just been published by Volga Press. Graham Perrett, the character involved in that water ski accident, Brian Weatherbone, is a local sports hero and a young Aboriginal man. And there is an undercurrent in the story about Aboriginal land rights and about relations between black and white in country towns.
Very much so. It was set, the novel is set in 1992, the year of the Mabo decision. I've written a white fella story. You know, I haven't told a black fella story, but that legal decision that when the High Court handed down that Mabo decision has always intrigued me in terms of defining what Australia is. It was an incredible decision, and you know, Australia's been changed ever since that High Court decision. You know, it's recognising that we're a nation that based on brute force, I guess, you know, for the last 220 years, but recognising, you know, it's gone some way to restoring some justice. You can't grow up in a country town with a significant Aboriginal population and not see the importance of Mabo.
Well, I think you cite Thea Astley, the late Queensland writer, as one of the influences on your own work. And her novel, A Kindness Cup, I think, deals with a massacre in a Queensland country town and with the attempt of a teacher to get the local community to confront that issue.
Yeah, I was always a big fan of Thea Astley, Kindness Cup, and another one of hers called A Descant for Gossips, that idea of the teacher interacting with the community and the consequences it can have. I mean, it's like Wake and Fright, I guess, the Kenneth Cook book as well. As I said, it's not a blackfella story, but it was my interpretation of how people might react to those events. I only touch on the Mabo decision and the consequences, but it is an undercurrent.
You mentioned there Wake in Fright, and Twelfth Fish does fit into a genre of Australian writing about the city kid who leaves the coast to go and work in a remote and somewhat threatening rural community. Are you consciously sort of buying into that genre of Australian writing?
It's wider than Australia, I would suggest, that stranger in a strange land concept, but yeah, definitely happy to explore values through the stranger being put into that scene. And I'm a big fan of American literature, of Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, you know, that exploring the values of a community by the stranger looking at, you know, holding a mirror up to the values that they espouse.
You play with the Wake in Fright genre a bit in the sense that, well, there's a terrific scene at the heart of the novel when Lawrence and Karen are out in the bush in their car. They've been having sex in the back seat on a remote road, and they're suddenly interrupted by two pig shooters whose hands are bloody from a fresh kill. And there is this kind of very threatening moment.
Yeah, look, it's probably not going to do me any favours as a politician, but I grew up shooting, you know, like that was, we always had guns in the house. When I used to go out with my brother-in-law shooting was very much a part of my life. My dad was a roo shooter at one stage. One of the guys I went to school with, I went out for a school reunion, and he was the proudest punch to show his big new roo shooting equipment on the back of his ute. So that idea of, well, what should we fear? You know, the two roo shooters on one level are very scary characters, but on the other level, they're good Samaritans that stop and help these guys out when they bog their car. So it's
exactly. I mean, you totally overturn our expectations, because this clash between the city and the country, between the educated teacher and doctor and the rough as guts outback rednecks, turns out that the two shooters are just there to help.
Yeah, And that's what you can so often see, that menace. It's, if you remember that movie The Boys, that chilling movie where, you know, you're just never quite sure of the menace below the surface. And it does exist in country towns. I mean, it exists everywhere. I'm sure you can always find a pub to get your head smacked in if you wanted to. But
within this kind of genre of the outback town and the stranger coming to town, I mean, there's also the Australian film Shame, starring Deborah Lee Furness, which deals with a town where gang rapes have been going on, and she rides in on a motorbike and confronts the shame of the town. So there is a kind of genre here.
Yeah, as I said, because I grew up in a country town, I see the menace, but also see the good in the communities. You know, so many people who are prepared to help out their neighbours. I mean, as they do city or country, I should point out.
Graham Perrett, there are some famous novelist politicians on the conservative side of politics, and at least in the UK. I'm thinking of the British conservative Geoffrey Archer, for example, or his 19th century predecessor Benjamin Disraeli. Are there role models on the Labour side for politician authors?
I must admit I haven't looked to the caucus past or present for inspiration in terms of literary matters. I tend to separate those two jobs. Politics is my day job, and obviously writing is something that I've had a passion for a long time. So no, although I'm a huge fan of the writings of Don Watson, not a politician, but certainly worked for Paul Keating. And I've read a few other political biographies, but the writing has tended to defer to the facts, rather, you know, whereas Don Watson actually is has a beautiful turn of phrase.
Yeah, it's non-fiction, though. There's not a lot of fiction writing in politics. And I guess that raises the question, is one of your careers going to have to give way to the other? Are you going to be able to continue being a novelist and continue being a politician?
I think they will continue to run parallel, because the good thing is I meet lots of people who are, you know, can be then reworked into fiction. So that I meet lots of wonderful characters, and certainly with politics, you see humanity at its best, and unfortunately every now and then humanity at its worst. So I've certainly haven't been short of inspiration over the last 9-10 years, but I'd be making sure that my work stays as fiction, not a non-fiction work. I'll leave that to the other backbenchers.
Graham Perrett there, Federal Labor MP for the seat of Moreton in Queensland and author of The Twelfth Fish, which has just been published by The Vulgar Press. And of course, he was speaking to Peter Mayers, presenter of The National Interest on ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.